John Busby with a Culture Buzz, and it's been a while since I spoke with this author, but it's not for lack of trying, and it's because he's been kind of deep in the creation part of the process as a writer. Peter Benani is my guest, and I probably, because I'm not Italian, butchered your name, Peter, so I'll let
You're pretty close, Benani.
Benani, so, you know, I keep working at it. But it's so good to have you back again with a new book. This is called Things I'm Seeing Without You. And we're going to be learning about this book. Peter is, we can proudly say, an Iowa-born author. He's now up in the Twin Cities, so we will share them with our neighbor to the north. But he will keep his roots still kind of here, touching in Iowa. There's a special connection because you folks know I have some great friends with the Des Moines Public Library System, and your mom kind of had a little connection with the library system too, right, Peter?
Yeah, she was the the kind of manager over at Franklin for years, I kind of feel like I sort of grew up in that building off and on.
It's kind of nice to have your own personal library. It's the size of a city library, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad. She pretty much brought home, I think, every book in that library for me before I left.
I have a feeling you had the voracious reading appetite to match it, too.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Maybe like a little time in middle school where I tried to be rebellious, but she would still bring home books for me, and I would end up reading them just because they were so good.
Well, speaking of books, we've got your new one here, and I love what the cover has as one of the many quotes of praise for this. John Corey Whaley, winner of the Prince Award, says, "This is required reading for anyone who's ever loved or lost someone, but especially both." And so, Things I'm Seeing Without You, I'm going to let you kind of start filling this in and let our listeners know what is going on.
Yeah, so the book is about a 17-year-old girl named Tess Fowler who is in an online relationship when the book begins. And it's kind of her first romantic relationship she's ever been in. She finds out one day that the boy that she has been in the relationship with has died. And she has to figure out through the rest of the book if she ever actually knew him. And while this is going on, she comes home to sort of stay with her father, who she's been estranged from, and starts working for his quirky funeral business, where he will blast your ashes into outer space, he will bury your prized racehorse. He's kind of trying to find untapped markets in the death business. So Tess reconnects with him and starts to help him move his funeral business in a more meaningful direction, all the while trying to navigate her own grief and figure out what this relationship meant and who she was really dating.
Wow. I mean, you take themes that are kind of classic and you take modern themes and you just mix a brand new recipe with all these ingredients. And there's such a relevance here. As my ADHD mind keeps bouncing around, if you were to categorize this as a book for what group, what would you say?
Well, so it's being published as a young adult book, so mostly the age of Tess, who's the main character. So 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds is kind of who it's being published for. But I've come to realize since putting this out that there are a lot of adults who read young adult books, especially ones that are at the very top of the kind of age range like this one. I think something like 40% of young adult fiction is bought and read by adults. So I think it would be good for adult readers as well.
I tend to avoid categorizations for the simple reason that I come from a position that good storytelling is good storytelling.
Yeah,
and that's all there is to it. You seem to have a knack for it because the last time we talked, it was about The House of Tomorrow, your debut novel, which was a winner of the Los Angeles Times Book Prize for First Fiction and the ALA Alex Award. And it even was adapted into a feature film.
That's correct.
Is this what took you so long to get your second book out?
That's a good question. So I think part of it was I was just trying to decide on the right project at first. So I started a few things that didn't really end up working for me and even wrote an entire book that I actually ended up shelving. It might see the light of day someday. Maybe it won't. I don't know. But then when I started writing this book, which took me about three and a half years, I wrote the first draft as a really long draft with multiple points of perspective. And then when I gave it to people to read, and one of those people was my mother, actually, they all had the same advice, which was that this book really felt like it was the teenage girl's story, and that that's what they were most interested in. That's what seemed like it was the sort of core, the heart of the book. So I ended up going back and completely rewriting it from the first-person point of view of Tess, and that process took a while, too. So it wasn't exactly the easiest path to getting this in the shape that it is now, but that's kind of, I think, the name of the game with writing novels. I'm usually kind of suspicious if it comes too easy.
Well, I'm sure you ended up subconsciously or consciously challenging yourself, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do not believe you are a teenage female.
No, although I do teach a lot of them. I teach at McAllister College in St. Paul, and most of my freshmen are about 18 years old. So even though I myself am not a teenage girl, I once was a teenager, and I sort of hear the voices of all of the really funny, bright young women that I'm lucky enough to teach at my college.
That is great. Peter Bagnani is my guest. He's got a great website. We'll keep you informed. And it is his name, Peter, BOGNANNI.com, PeterBagnani.com. Go there, and that way you can connect with both of his books now. Also, if you're wise like I am, well, or like people I know at least, they will look to their local independent booksellers, such as Alice Meyer up at Beaverdale Books, because she will make sure she keeps these books in stock. If there isn't a copy of Things I'm Seeing Without You on the shelf, probably because it's sold out, she'll get a copy for you. But make sure you get a copy. As Peter and I have already discussed, it is a broader sweep of the brush than what the industry tries to do, which is categorize different books into different genre. So Give yourself a chance and find ways to share it with people, because that's what it's all about. Has this, once you got it completed out there to the world, started getting feedback from this, have there been any kind of revelations from your story that maybe you didn't see while you were in the process?
I think the most interesting thing actually has been to talk to teenagers about it. There were some teenage readers of The House of Tomorrow, because there were younger characters in that book too, even though it was published as an adult book. But this time around, I think since it's being shelved where teenagers look for books, I've actually gotten to meet quite a few of them at conferences and get messages from them online. And I think there's just there's a lot of teenagers who are dealing with themes that are tackled in this book, either having suffered a loss and not quite knowing how to deal with it, suffering from mental illness, which is touched on in the book, and not quite knowing like who or when to sort of share that. And so a lot of teenagers have been really impressed and sort of touched, have been incredibly open with me about the sort of things that they're struggling with that relate to what some of the characters in the book are struggling with.
Well, one thing I want to mention, just to give you a chance, because some people may say, well, this is an obvious dedication. It's to your mother, Kathy Bagnani. And at the same time, that's not something that a writer would do lightly.
I asked my wife first if it was okay.
And her response was?
She said, yeah, it's fine. She got the dedication in the first book, and it was really like a lot of my mom's advice that sort of reshaped the book and made me think twice about it. My mom was probably one of the most voracious readers I've ever met, which doesn't probably wouldn't surprise you knowing that she managed a library, but I feel like she used to read a book every 2 days, sometimes every night when I was growing up. And so I trust her opinion when I have her read my work, and I was responsive to her feedback, and I feel like she really, as I said, sort of shaped the new direction of the book. So I thought a dedication was the best way to go.
Well, and there also comes a point when you have a parent that is in related field to what you're in, where it evolves from just parent and child into associates, kindred spirits. And that's kind of the sense that I was getting here too with the dedication.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think I realized how cool what my mom does for a living is when I was young. I just sort of felt like she works at the place with lots of books. But as I guess got older and got even more into reading and writing and all of that, I was like, well, libraries are amazing places. And she always had, you know, an incredible selection of books for us to read growing up. Librarians are also often on the cutting edge of free speech and access to information. And so, yeah, I think, like, she has only, and what she does has only grown in my esteem as I've gotten older and, you know, a little smarter.
And the getting smarter is always good to know. I'm always fascinated by the process for coming up with a title of a book. Things I'm Seeing Without You almost reads like a very short poem.
Yeah, it's kind of a long title, which I was a little hesitant about at first. But so the place where the title comes from in the book is, there's a series of messages that Tess continues to send to the boy who's died even after he's gone. So she sends them to his social media accounts, even though he's not there to check them anymore. And she calls these messages that she sends "Things I'm Seeing Without You." And there's sometimes they're just like a list of like what she saw on the way to school. Other times they're about an experience or something along the way. And so I actually hadn't considered it as a title. I thought maybe it was too long and like too much of a mouthful. But when I was working with my agent, he sent me an email once that was like title question mark. And he was like, "Things I'm Seeing Without You." And I was like, oh yeah, I guess that's the title. And I probably knew that the whole way through. I just wasn't really like, you know, admitting it to myself.
Well, I think it's an excellent choice. It feels so right. And sometimes trying to strive for brevity in a title can become an impediment, I think. And instead, yeah. Instead, you've nailed it with this. This is a beautiful read, folks. Quite honestly, I don't care what age you are. If you want a well-crafted, well-thought-out exploration of kind of mind and existence, you can put so many different phrases here to this, but Peter Bignani's book, Things I'm Seeing Without You, is a wonderful journey. It's one I encourage you to take. And quite honestly, if you have a friend who has a child, or if you have a child or even a grandchild who is in that teenage girl range, maybe that you can consider that the target group, but don't consider it solely the target group. You and your friends have fun reading this book too, because there are some insights along the way. I love the way you fold in the social media aspect, because it's something that's always kind of, I've always been curious about that, because it is that, you know, that we've all been of an age now where someone that we've had on social media has passed. Mm-hmm. So what happens with that?
Yeah, it's a strange space, this kind of digital grief that I think happens in the book. And the way I sort of think about it in my own life, I think when it first started happening to me, like it felt kind of strange and surreal that like people's Facebook pages would still be up. But in the kind of years since then, I started to kind of appreciate it, because usually on that person's birthday, you get a reminder and people start writing messages on their page, and it kind of becomes a tribute that's still alive to them. And so I've come to actually appreciate it a little bit, even though sometimes I still get a kind of odd, unfamiliar feeling by seeing those.
It's a brave new world, but it's not a brave new world that is going to go unchallenged or unexplored, thanks to people like you, Peter. Peter Bignani is my guest. That, by the way, is his website as well, www.peterbignani.com. Peter, as it's usually spelled, Bognani, BOGNANNI.com. You can go there. You can get both of his books through that website. Go to your local independent bookseller, by all means, and patronize those people. They are wonderful people. Things I'm Seeing Without You is a wonderful book, and one that should be on your list of, I've got to check this one off and get it so I can read it, so I can just verify that what Peter has been telling this John Busby character is all true and accurate. You will find it is. I would think that being a teacher of creative writing at a great college like McAllister has to be just a wealth of, you know, idea gathering. And so you're just kind of like constantly placing them in different baskets in the mind. And you've got to have some baskets that are starting to get full with the next project.
Yeah, so I am working on my second young adult book right now. I'm going to do at least one more, hopefully more after that. But the next one is going to be about a bunch of kind of misfit teenagers who are trying to save their neighborhood art house movie theater from shutting down. That's kind of going to be a book about finding your first work family. I worked a lot of sort of bad jobs when I was growing up, and when I got to the Twin Cities, also worked for a really cool independent art house cinema called the Oak Street Cinema in Minneapolis. And it's a little bit of my kind of love letter to that place, which was eventually torn down. Ah. So yeah, that's the kind of project I have brewing right now. I'm trying to finish a first draft. I don't know if it'll take as long as this book did or if it'll be a little faster, but I'm kind of ready either way to see it through.
I love it how your muse just keeps you focused outside of your college career in inspiring next generations of creative writers. And for that, we're grateful. But we're especially grateful, Peter Bignani, for Things I'm Seeing Without You, your latest book. It's already receiving rave reviews, and this is going to be great fun. So much continued success with everything you do. Keep us informed and know that there's always an open microphone for you whenever you want to talk about any kind of creative mischief you're getting into.
That's a good way to put it. Thank you.
You betcha. Take care, Peter.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.